Woi woi, woi woi, woi woi. Danny Denko on the radio again. Yo, if you want no smoke free weed, go board yourself. You need to go plant a seed. Go board yourself, make your knowledge increase. Go board yourself, go board yourself, go board yourself. You want no smoke.
Hey, all right, welcome to episode number 133 of Grow Bud Yourself. We have a great show in store for you guys today. We're going to talk about some monumental news, the Schedule 3 thing, federal news. We're going to be talking with Terrence White of Monco in D.C. about that. Our interview is with White Boy Kev, legacy operator here in New York. And we're going to have the strain of the fortnight, a grow tip, and answers to your questions as per usual. All brought to you by Nature's Heritage, Seeds Here Now, Sweet Leaf Nutrients, Excelsior Extracts, and Prime Superior Inoculant. Episode 133 coming at you. Whether you're growing from seed or from clone, Prime Superior's simple, safe, and effective products can take your cultivation program to the next level, helping to produce higher quality, naturally healthier plants. Prime Superior offers a two-step process that will benefit any garden. This is possible thanks to Prime Superior's proprietary strain of Bovaria bassania, which is optimized for plants and sets up a symbiosis that increases terpenes, cannabinoids, and yield. Simply coat your seeds to inoculate and aid rapid germination, or dip your clone cutting with the world's first biological cloning honey to improve growth the way nature intended. Next, continue maintenance of your crop with foliar or fog applications of Prime Superior's Drench, which will boost your plant's growth and ensure a heavy harvest. Best of all, the Drench will work with already established gardens, so anyone at any stage of growth can achieve a cleaner crop with better results. I've used this stuff on my own cannabis plants and house plants, and it works amazing. I love the cloning honey. I love the boost that you get from using the Drench. And I just think all your plants will benefit from this, green up and grow better, and honestly grow more of the essential oils that we're after, the terpenoids and flavonoids and all of that. So now is the time to try Prime Superior, the world's first biological cloning honey, and Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use this code PS420 for 15% off your entire order at primesuperior.com. So don't hesitate, inoculate, and visit primesuperior.com today to learn more. All right, welcome back. As always, thank you to DJ Jacques and Winstrong for the incredible Grow Bud Yourself theme song. We love it. We hope it gets you in the mood and, you know, to grow, to chat about cannabis, and to talk a little bit about some pretty monumental news that happened this week. Right, Mike?
Yeah, man. I mean, usually you ask me how I'm doing, and usually I'm just like, I'm okay. But I actually am feeling a little better this time than in previous episodes, because we have some pretty interesting news to share with you guys. And our listeners know, after years of us harping on this show, dating back to President Biden's directive to examine how cannabis is scheduled in the Controlled Substances Act back in October of 2022, I'm shocked and happy to announce that the DEA has finally, at long last, agreed to reschedule from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Now, for those who don't know, this is actually the fifth attempt at rescheduling cannabis or removing it from the first schedule, reserved for the most addictive substances with no medicinal value. The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, NORML, first petitioned the DEA to review pot status in the CSA back in 1972, just 1 year after the CSA took effect. That petition was officially rejected in 1994, a mere 22 years later. A 1995 petition to reschedule was filed. That was also denied, and that was denied in 2001. Then in 2002, a third rescheduling petition was filed, which the DEA opted to entirely ignore until they were sued in federal court and forced to respond. And as you might have guessed, they responded by denying that petition in 2011. So then that same year, 2011, the governors of Washington and Rhode Island, they brought a rescheduling petition to the DEA, and that was rejected in 5 years. So that brings us to now, to 2022, the fifth attempt to reschedule cannabis in the CSA. This time, President Biden urged federal agencies to reexamine how pot is scheduled. The move to Schedule 3 was supported by the Health Department and the FDA. However, the DEA dragged its feet, reminding everyone that their agency had the final say in how cannabis is scheduled. Well, somewhat incredibly, the DEA announced this week that it agrees with its fellow government entities and it will move to reschedule cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Now, Schedule 3 drugs have less potential for abuse. They're less addictive than Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs, and they have an accepted medical value. Now, of course, this being federal politics, it's not quite that simple. The White House Office of Management and Budget has to review this change, but if they approve it, the next step is it would go before a public comment phase. But considering this whole thing was suggested from the White House, it seems likely that cannabis will be moved to Schedule 3, man. Pretty exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. Pretty monumental. I know there's a lot of differing opinions out there. I know a lot of people think, that all this does is open the door to pharmaceuticals, and that, you know, there's some truth to that as well. Yeah. So there's, sure. You know, there's definitely pros and cons here. But of course, any kind of federal acknowledgement, especially from the DEA, that cannabis has medicinal use is massive. It's right. Massive. And it opens the door to tons of research as well. So, there's a big picture here and then there's a smaller picture. And the small picture is, okay, what does this mean? Schedule 3, are the pharmies going to take over? Is big business going to basically co-opt cannabis? Are we just going to be consuming this, you know, this flower in pill form or some type of sublingual tablets or whatever it is.
Suppositories.
I know there's a lot of people out there. I've seen it. I know, you know, there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of pontification about what this means. None of us really truly know. All we do know is it is huge.
It's the biggest marijuana law reform movement in our lifetimes, in 50 years.
Absolutely. Huge.
We wanted descheduling, obviously. But this is still gigantic for the DEA to acknowledge this.
Absolutely. And it's a step in the direction of descheduling as well. I mean, you don't go from one to nothing. That was
clearly
somewhat unrealistic of a desire, although, you know, obviously I share that desire. I do not believe that cannabis belongs on any sort of schedule. Alcohol, tobacco, and things are not on schedules. So certainly we want descheduling, but you got to understand politics is a glacial process and it takes forever and it's two steps forward, one step back. And it just doesn't work in the way that, you know, we all dream that it should, right? But you take your wins when you get them. And honestly, like, you know, yes, pharmaceutical companies are going to jump into cannabis. That would happen whether it was descheduled or, you know, rescheduled. The point here is the government has admitted that there is medical use to cannabis, and that is huge, especially a DEA, which, you know, make a living off of the criminalization of whatever we want to criminalize and call a drug.
Right.
So It's huge. It's going to have lasting repercussions, both good and bad, of course. So I'm not, I don't have blinders on my eyes as to what the negatives could be here, but there is a tremendous amount of positives, including, like I said, the ability to do a lot more research, which I think is going to further push cannabis further away from Schedule 1 and 2 and 3 and beyond. So yeah, I mean, to me it's massive. It's a huge win. Every time there's a win, there's always people who have their conspiracies about where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. None of us really know. And
you might know it's a good thing is that the anti-marijuana group SAM, led by our old friend who shall remain nameless here, they're currently out there trying to raise money to fight rescheduling cannabis. So they started that campaign the day after the DEA made this announcement. So it's that makes me believe that we're on the right track here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, clearly it's a win. It comes with caveats, of course, it's a huge win. And it's something that's irreversible also. They're never going to go back and make it Schedule 2 or 1. So that's forever. It's a huge monumental day for this amazing flower that we've all been fighting for. And you don't win in politics, 100% all the time. You just don't get everything you want, but you get what you need. And I do think, to paraphrase from our friends Jagger and Richards, but the point here is take the win and let's all just, take a moment to celebrate how far we've come. This is unimaginable under any kind of Reagan or Bush administration, unimaginable even under Clinton and Obama, to be honest. So the fact that this has happened now is huge and irreversible, and certainly a huge, a major step in the right direction.
Yeah.
To free this amazing healing flower. So,
and we should also just take a quick moment to just recognize, give flowers to Normal and John Getman in particular, who fought tirelessly over decades to try to get cannabis out of the Schedule One. They failed. It seemed back when they were doing this in the 70s, in the 90s, in the early 2000s, that they were fighting an impossible battle, but it actually did happen, or it seems like it's going to happen. And assuming it does move forward, I guess, what does that mean? Unquestionably, it's the biggest step forward in marijuana law reform in 50 years. But what does it mean for the legality of cannabis on the federal level? How does it impact banking? As Dan mentioned, it does open up research, but what exactly does that mean?
I particularly, to me, all of this is a reminder that, the home grow laws are so important. That's something that is not affected by this move to Schedule 3, but also something where, hey, if you're worried about the pharmaceutical companies and all of that, then take it all into your own hands and make your own medicine.
So while we all wanted cannabis removed from the CSA altogether or descheduled, this is a significant step, but to figure out what it all really means, we should probably bring in someone with a bit better of an understanding of pot policy. So why don't we welcome Terrence White to the show, and maybe he could help us out here. All right, and as promised, here we are on Grow Bud Yourself, and we're really excited to have Terrence White, the CEO of Monco, and also really plugged into the pot policy that's going on down there in Washington, D.C. Dan and I were just discussing the move from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3, and we wanted to get your take on it, but maybe first you could give us a little bit of your background in cannabis and your journey and all of that.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I'm Terrence White, CEO and founder of Monco here in Washington, D.C. And I got started in cannabis roughly about 4 years ago after a career in real estate. I switched over to cannabis. I am a returned citizen, which prompted me to get a career starting in cannabis. I spent 18 and a half months at FCI Morgantown in West Virginia. And I learned a lot about people and cannabis. I've been around drugs all my life. My father was pretty much very strong in the drug game while I was growing up. But I went to college and had a white collar crime. But there I played football with the guy that it was a college teammate of mine. And the first day I walked into FCI Morgantown, I said, "Matt?" And he was like, "Terrence, what you doing here?" And come to find out, he had been sentenced to 84 months for cannabis. I came to find out not only Matt, but other people, white, black, brown, yellow, Asian, Chinese, you name it, was in federal prison for cannabis, whether it was growing it, transporting it, selling it, whatever the case may be. And me being who I am, I got curious about why. And at that time, DC, I moved back from North Carolina to DC. And they had passed Initiative 71 here, which DC is a gifting, even though they passed reparation. There was a rider passed called the Harris Rider. Andy Harris put a rider so that DC could not become adult use. So the loophole was through I-71 so that the citizens of DC that did not have a medical card could actually carry up to 2 ounces, which then prompted to brick and mortar stores opening. So I sat down and wrote a business plan about I wanted to open a brick and mortar, and I named it Monco. And I wanted to take the stitch and stigma off of cannabis and make it luxury. And that's when I began to advocate for Black and Brown returned citizens to get the same opportunity and build the same generational wealth as their colleagues and counterparts. And so I then became the chairman of the I-71 committee, which I'm still chairman today, of the I-71 stores that were compliant by city rules and regulations. But my job was to basically lobby and to for a pathway to a license, which we've done successfully. And then I became a thought leader in the space by some because social equity and had become my platform to speak on. And as a returned citizen, I took it very seriously to not only lobby but educate people on why and find out the justice side of this. And try to get people of color the same opportunities as their counterparts. So a little background on me.
No, that's tremendous, and we all know that DC has been its own can of worms over the years with Congress doing its best and damnedest to make sure that the people can't get cannabis. So good for you. Also, the people listening who may not know, returning citizen is a person who was impacted by the criminal justice system, often wrongly, and is returning to society to do good. Is my understanding of it? Am I explaining that okay, do you think?
Yeah, that's pretty much in a nutshell.
Okay.
A lot of times we talk about people who've been incarcerated and them returning back to society. We reference that to returned citizens, right? But in a lot of states, they don't have the same rights. It takes some 5 years. Well, if they're on probation, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years before they ever get their voting rights back. Some states like North Carolina won't allow felons to actually rent an apartment.
Which is insane.
You talk about the war on drugs, and I know we're here to talk about reclassifying. It took us 54 years to reclassify cannabis, and that all started because at the time when Blacks were fighting for their rights and burning down Watts and DC and Philadelphia and Harlem. The DOJ decided to make cannabis a Schedule I drug so that they could do mass incarceration. So that was another way of Jim Crow systematic racism that was mostly failed by people of color. And So when you look at that history and you look at where we are today in society with these same isms, racism, socialism, we were still there. Jim Crow still alive. It's just modern day. So, the DEA and the Department of Justice, bravo to them for taking the steps of something that people have been fighting for 54 years that should have never been a Schedule One drug. And when you start talking about heroin and OxyContin, those are Schedule One drugs. Those are drugs that will get you addicted. And those are drugs that have killed people. As far as we know, if cannabis is done correctly, it hasn't killed anybody. It's helped people. The culture of cannabis has always been a savior to a lot of people because that was their outlet.
I think this also opens the door to a ton of research that can be done, which has been held back for all of those 54 years. And I'm to me, that's potentially some of the biggest benefit of rescheduling or descheduling. I mean, honestly, we would all prefer to cannabis be removed from the schedule altogether, but that doesn't happen overnight. And a move from Schedule One to Three is a massive move. It does, bring in that pharmaceutical question because now, obviously, Schedule Three drugs are still prescribed by doctors, but it opens the door to so much more research. And, we still have home grow laws. We still have, our medical laws. So I don't think it's going to be the negative that some of the people are predicting right now. I think a lot of times when anything happens, people pick sides and they want to speculate or pontificate about what the repercussions will be. It's hard to know now what the repercussions will be, but they seem to me to be mostly positives, especially on that research angle. What are your thoughts as far as?
Yeah, it is positive, but the FDA is probably holding a lot of patents that they haven't talked about. Like you said, we said it's been 54 years. And it's strange that Mississippi is medical, and one of the first southern states, but people don't understand all the federal testing happens in Mississippi.
Right.
And so when you look at this, we have to be careful about what's up the FDA sleeve when it comes to cannabis and the patents that they hold. And as Dan, as you spoke about, the doctors still have to prescribe. But let me take it a step further. My cause and who I am to continue to advocate and fight is about freeing those who are in prison, legalizing and decriminalizing cannabis. Social equity without justice, and I preach it all day, no social equity, no justice, no social equity. No appropriations, no social equity. No reciprocity, no social justice. Those things go hand in hand. And as a community that has been battered the most, we should run to legalize cannabis because that's the one thing that we have the ability to get right.
Yeah, and we should be very, very clear that this move, which is just from Schedule One to Schedule Three, does not legalize cannabis on the federal level. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
Does not.
it doesn't free any prisoners either.
It doesn't free any prisoners, and we have said that the justice system is the biggest systematic racism system, going back to slavery. And when you do mass incarcerations, private prisons at the state level, and some at the federal level, I think Obama got rid of them at the federal level. I may be wrong about that. But We're still dealing with people who are making money off of other people, which in my term is slavery. And so we have to hold those accountable, and we got to think about this. I'm fighting for DC and legalization, reparation, because we see 22 million people plus every year. And so we're missing out on six, seven, $800 million a year cannabis business. And we got a 8.8 square mile city. I'm hoping that in reclassifying or rescheduling cannabis also will come with interstate commerce, with banking laws, the Safer Bank Act, which I think Senator Schumer said that he was going to put in the FAA bill to go ahead and hopefully in the next 60 to 90 days that would pass. But why are we've been fighting for so long to actually just have an industry that is normal.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly, I guess the reminder is we've come a long way, but we still have a very long way to go. But you know, we have come far enough that you know there is a retail cannabis dispensary in Washington, D.C., where people can come in, any adult 21 and older with a valid government ID, purchase off a menu, be treated like a customer instead of a criminal. So tell people, you know, if they are visiting DC, how they can find out about Munko, where you're located, and social media and things like that.
So I'm located at 444 K Street Northwest here in the Mount Vernon Triangle area. You can get me on IG at Monco DC. If you want to contact me directly, I can always be emailed, or you can definitely call Monco and someone will get in contact with me. I thank you guys for this opportunity to speak on this matter. Continue to do you guys' good work.
We should just also remind everybody that it took 15 years from when voters in DC legalized medical cannabis to when the first medical cannabis sale was made at a dispensary. So these things take time. We all know that. Just before you go, I really wanted to ask you both, I guess, this question. And I know it's a deep question, so maybe just a superficial answer, but is this a win in some way for Biden? I mean, he is the person who initiated this change. And obviously, yes, it had to go through all these federal agencies, but ultimately this came from his directive 2 years ago. So how do you think this affects him maybe in the election in November? Does it do anything for him?
Well, I think that's a two-part answer. Yes and no. Yes, he has been a trailblazer, in a sense that 2 years ago he did start this and said that he started expunging records and releasing some people from prison. And now we have rescheduling. But if you ask a vast amount of returned citizens between ages of 45 and 60, they would say they would never vote for Joe Biden because of the war on drugs and the crack law. That 101 law destroyed a lot of people's lives. And although he was not the one that orchestrated the bill, he was the one that initiated and finally pushed the bill across the line. And for those people who don't understand the war on drug in the 90s, what happened in Black communities and major cities, that epidemic was huge. But when people were getting 20 and 30 years and life sentences, that I have a brother who has done 37 years of his life in prison, he would never vote for Joe Biden. So yes and no is the answer to this.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think I also agree. I think yes and no. But I do think, you know, we have to give people the capacity to change. their beliefs and thoughts over time. And so seemingly he and Vice President Kamala Harris, who also was pretty instrumental in locking a lot of people up, you know, their ideas have evolved and the law has evolved. And I think we're definitely in a better place now than we were in the 90s. Obviously, that discrepancy you mentioned between, you know, the weight of crack cocaine and powder cocaine and all of that, those laws that put people in jail for decades, you know, hopefully we're turning around that legacy, and our kids and their kids won't be growing up in the kind of world we grew up in, where, you know, you could get decades in prison for small amounts of cocaine, marijuana, or anything else. It just, obviously, you know, prohibition is a house of cards and it's falling, but, you know, a lot of people paid a serious price and are still paying a very strong price for that. And so, yeah, I do think it's a win. I don't know if it, you know, helps as far as votes go and things like that, but, you know, I take it as a step in the right direction and something to celebrate, but the fight obviously continues because we still have a long way to go to really free this healing flower. And again, I'll reiterate that home grow laws are so important. If you're worried about the pharmaceuticals taking over cannabis, support home grow and support craft flower and concentrates, and, you know, put your money where your mouth is. Spend the money on the cannabis you want to see more of, and you'll get that. Spend it on the, you know, government stuff, and that's what you'll get. So that's kind of the way I see it. I do consider it a win, though, at the end of the day. I mean, you can't go back to Schedule One. Schedule One is no medicinal value at all, up there with, you know, the worst of the worst. So, yeah. Well, I want to say thank you to Terrence White of Monco in D.C. Thank you for sharing your story and your thoughts and your analysis of the situation right there from the heart of the federal government.
Well, thanks, Mike and Danny. I appreciate your time and you having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us, everybody. Please go check out monco.co. That's monko.co. And yes, thank you so much, Terrence White.
All right. So yes, and now we're going to take a little break and come back with White Boy Kev from New York, a legacy legend here in New York. We're going to be talking to him about the history of the haze and a number of other amazing things going on. So why don't we take a break and come back after these messages. As their motto goes, keep it fresh. Nature's Heritage takes pride in bringing the freshest, most potent, aromatic, and tasty flower to the Massachusetts and Maryland markets. Understanding that plants are the boss, the cultivation team gives them everything they need to reach their highest potential, including using canna coco and nutrients, some of the best in the industry. With very little automation in their process, Nature's Heritage is grown by humans who care for their plants from cultivation to harvest and drying and curing all the way down to hand trimming their buds. The results capture the finest aspects of the many unique strains Nature's Heritage cultivates. And I should mention, I have literally tried their flower. They really put an emphasis on the quality of their products, the genetics, and the way that it's grown. It's all done by hand. No automation, and all very well dried and cured properly, which is so important. So when people tell me, you know, dispensary weed can't hold a candle to this, that, and the other, I tell them, you know, go check out Nature's Heritage. You can go on the website naturesheritagecannabis.com to find a store near you. If you're in Massachusetts or Maryland, you could take a look at their different products. All the different strains that they have, it's pretty amazing. So I can personally vouch for the quality of Nature's Heritage products. Visit naturesheritagecannabis.com. And as always, hashtag keep it fresh. All right, welcome back. And we have the privilege of an amazing guest for you guys this week. A legend of the New York legacy scene, for many decades, and someone who I consider a friend and a colleague, and definitely very with a very interesting story to tell. Welcome, White Boy Kev, the founder of La Marina Boys. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you guys. Thank you guys. It's an honor to be with you. Thinking back when I was young, just getting on High Times magazine, reading your articles and everything. So, like, it's a cool moment for me. Thank you.
Man, I appreciate that. That's awesome. But yeah, let's go back to the old days real quick. And why don't you let me know? Like, basically, you grew up uptown.
Washing out.
Right, but you're Irish.
Yes, 100% Irish.
Right. So, but you grew up in uptown
Washington Heights,
Manhattan, Washington Heights, which was
predominantly Dominican.
right. It had been Irish prior. I
Yes,
mean,
Irish and
the
Jewish.
Irish and Jewish.
Yeah, 60s, 70s, it was Puerto Ricans and Cubans and some Dominican families. And then somewhere around like 83 is when Dominicans just came and just took over.
Yeah. So, and you were White Boy Kev. How did, tell me a little bit about, your youth, in Uptown New York, and how you came to acquire the nickname, and also just what life was like back then uptown.
Well, life in the city was fun. There was always something to do. We were outside playing and hanging all day long. And the city was just live with energy. Not like today where you see kids aren't outside playing anymore. We were outside all the time. Had a lot of friends that were Dominican, still a lot of friends that are Dominican, and just enjoyed being out on the scene and out on the corners. I was fascinated with being outside all the time. I wouldn't be home for anything. And then somewhere around 91 is when I got into selling bud for the first time. And then 93 is when I started running a few corners in Washington Heights. So I was one of the very few people, if not one of the only ones, that was on multiple corners in the Heights. And that was based on friendships I gained throughout the years of playing sports and different things. So I was able to get on a lot of different corners at that time. And then 93 is when Haze came about and started taking over the whole game. And then 94 is about when I got the cut from Miami, the Cuban Black Haze, and been growing it for 30 years.
That's amazing. And when you say corners, I mean for the younger people out there, obviously there were, the corners where you could get crack, you could get dust, angel dust, and things
Everything.
like that. Everything, right? So
Washington Heights was like the ultimate drug pipeline, everything from marijuana to coke to crack to heroin. You name the drug, Washington Heights had it.
right. And a lot of that is also the proximity to the George Washington Bridge, people coming over from New Jersey, people coming down from
Connecticut,
Westchester
Boston.
and Connecticut, people even Boston, like you said,
Yes.
Long Island. It's so kind of centrally located and so sort of easy in, easy out kind of access. And all of Uptown Manhattan had its spots, but the weed spots in particular, I mean, you're literally talking about like selling like nickel bags and dime bags and 20s, that sort of thing, individually right out in the open.
Dimes and twenties, dimes
Right.
and twenties.
Dimes and 20s of haze, and running multiple corners. I mean, that must have been a pretty scary experience. I mean, you're not just dealing with cops, you're also dealing with potentially other people trying to rob you. Customers trying to rob you. I mean, tell me a little bit about what that sort of entails, like running multiple corners in those days.
Oh, yeah. Well, your head is on a constant swivel, between the stick-up kids, between the cops and everything else. And, Washington Heights, although it was a ghetto, it was a high-class ghetto. So, your mom and everybody was safe around the neighborhood. Like guys like me and others on the corners made sure that, young kids weren't doing dumb robberies or stupid things because then it was shut down our corners. But it was dangerous to be out there hustling on the corners because it was a lot of money. And, you know, it, at the time when I got into the weed game was the crack game was still pretty strong and, you know, on its way out. So a lot of crack dealers started getting into the weed game, seeing the type of money we were making. And that's when it got more dangerous.
Right. And then, you know, depending on who's mayor, also is how strong the crackdowns would be. And once Giuliani took over, you know, in like 96 or so, I do remember a lot of weed spots were shut down or raided and kind of, you know, the delivery services were kind of started to become more popular, people coming actually to your homes. Did you sense any of that sort of transition?
Well, we just, you know, when Giuliani took over, we'd call it TNT, was Tuesdays and Thursdays. We knew the raids were out. So basically, you know, you'd see them around and know either to shut down or be ballsy and keep going. I always played things safe. So when it was really hot, I kept my workers off of the grid. And, you know, after 2 hours, they'd do all their bust and they were off the streets. And then we'd go back out there again.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. The TNT. I remember that the vans were also TNT, Tactical Narcotics Task Force.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, you're just constantly on the run. But still, there was such a demand for that haze. You know, people would travel far and wide to Uptown Manhattan to get it, whether it be Dyckman, Washington Heights, Harlem. Now, going into, you know, the 2000s, did that expand or did you end up seeing that the growing became more important to you than maybe the distribution side of things?
Well, in 98 or 99, my brother and I, we did the marina up on Dyckman, which was an outdoor restaurant. And, you know, we were doing really well on Sundays. We'd average like 1,500 people on a Sunday afternoon. So I'd bring in a lot of bands from Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico. So that definitely put me more in the spotlight, which is not a good thing when you're a hustler. So I had to start distancing myself from the corners. And then by around 2003, I would say, I pretty much disconnected from the corners and just concentrated on the marina and the growing aspect. And going to Florida, picking up the packs from down there to supplement what I wasn't growing. So yeah, I definitely transitioned off the corners. And then in 2005, I believe is when the cops and the feds raided the marina and locked my brother up, put him in jail as a kingpin, even though he never sold drugs in his life. They were really coming for me, but you know, I was aware they were coming for me. So you know, I was really insulated at the time. So once we lost the marina, my brother was in jail as a kingpin. I knew my corner days and being outside were over. So that's when I just stayed in the gardens and stayed out the neighborhood. I lived in Jersey. And other than going to visit my mom in the city, I pretty much disconnected from the corners. And if anybody wanted to meet me, it definitely wasn't in the Heights.
Right. Now, as far as the history of the haze, you know, there's a lot of different stories there. To your recollection, you know, what is you know the history of the haze? How did New York become famous for that particular strain? And yeah, just give me a little bit of the history.
Well, I would say it was somewhere around 93 when it first came up from Miami. From Florida, that's where all the haze was coming from. And it was just different than any other weed. You know, before that, we had the Northern Lights and, you know, Seattle and a few other different, like, types of exotic weeds. But once haze took over, it was haze or nothing in the corners. So, yeah, that came from the Cubans. When they got the cut, I'm not too sure on the years. But I first started getting the packs in 93, and then 94 is when I got the cut and stayed growing it since then. And I believe it's the Northern Lights 5 times Neville's Haze is probably what I have today, but I'm not too sure.
Yeah, I mean, it does seem to go back to that NL5 haze that somebody must have picked up early on, maybe in Amsterdam from over there, and brought a particular pheno that just really was on that haze side of things. But man, what a strain, and how many other strains have come about since then. That's what I want to help people to understand too, is that, you know, how far things have changed. Now we have a THC museum in Soho that's five floors high. So yeah, tell me a little bit about just, you know,
back in the days, if you call me White Boy Kev, we were fighting. And now it's my brand. So yeah, things have changed a lot.
So the nickname didn't come, you didn't name yourself White Boy Kev. That was something people called you.
I was the white boy because I stuck out. And, you know, like if it was friends of mine, like they were calling me Kev, they weren't calling me white boy, you know?
Right.
So normally when somebody called me white boy, it was a sign of disrespect. I took it as, you know, so I always had a chip on my shoulder. And I grew up, you know, Irish family, fighters, brawlers. So, you know, I was quick to fight. I liked fighting, but never guns or anything like that. So, you know, I did a lot of fighting.
Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, that's something I want to remind people of is, you know, what that battle was like back then, as far as, you know, even at the parade, we didn't call it the parade. It was like a march. The cannabis march, and people were being arrested at the march by the hundreds, and New York City in general was the marijuana arrest capital of the world, 50,000 plus arrests per year, and people run through the system, and I think, you know, 89 to 90% Black and Latino, the statistics on that. So people do need to understand that this was a war, on us, all of us. And you know, on Uptown in particular, of course, at being the place where you would go in those days to pick up the product. So tell me, you know, what you see now. I mean, as far as obviously we're 3 years into legalization, so to speak, there's been obvious mistakes made by the government, but also
was it a mistake?
Or do you think, you know, they plan for it to fail this way?
Of course.
I mean, all of that is possible. You know, you also have, I mean, I'm of the opinion that, you know, government bureaucracy isn't nearly as clever as people give them credit for. I think it's mostly just them messing up, but maybe messing up a bit on purpose. But what do you see? I mean, certainly a lot less arrests being made, right? But Tell me a little bit about where you see the state of things right now, in New York in particular.
It's just the wild, wild west right now. You know, everybody's a weed dealer. You know, everybody's got weed on them. I mean, some things are beautiful, like, you know, you don't have to worry about getting arrested. You know, I drive around with a pound in my car and I'm not stressed out anymore. I could smoke outside if I want. So, you know, there's a lot of great things going on. You know, I get to meet the community, like you said, those parades and things like that. I avoided all of that because, you know, I had enough problems. I wasn't putting myself out there any more than I needed to. So, you know, being around the community and seeing so many other people that, you know, that went through things like I did, and people that went through worse, or family members that were lost. I think people don't realize the amount of damage that was done to so many families in the neighborhoods, especially Washington Heights and Dyckman. You know, I didn't realize, I always kept my family safe, and like my kids didn't know anything about what I did until 2 years ago. And I remember when I was telling my wife after I came back from California, I was like, you know, I'm going to do an Instagram and do podcasts. And she was like, what are you talking about? That's the opposite of everything you've ever done. And I was like, things are different, you know? So I knew I had to jump in, but it took me 6 months to convince her to agree with me to tell my kids. And, you know, it was at that point that I realized, you know, she had damages because she was hiding who I was, you know, and people ask, what does your husband do? And it's all private security. That was the line for everything, you know? So just seeing the damage that went to other people as well that weren't even directly into it.
Absolutely. And then, so now you have also, you founded La Marina Boys. Tell me a bit about that and what you're doing with that.
Well, you know, it's funny because for years, like after we lost the Marina, it was such a, I would say it was almost embarrassing for people to know that the Marina was mine because of what happened and what happened to my brother and, you know, the shame that went on to my mom. But now I get to tell the story about what really happened. They had me under investigation in the Marina because I was a weed dealer and I was doing well. And that's what caused the circumstances of everything that ended up happening. So, you know, when it happened at the time and I'd have reporters reach out to me, I couldn't say anything. I couldn't say, oh, yeah, no, look, the thing is, I'm a weed dealer. I'm not anything else. And because, you know, even back then, being a weed dealer wasn't far off from being a crack dealer. So now I get to tell the story and, you know, I get to be proud of what I accomplished in the Marina. And so the Marina Boys is me and the guys, because there's a lot of people, not just myself. You know, Joe and Nelson down in Florida, they're doing it legal already. So Joe and I go back over 30-something years, and it started with him going to 183rd and Audubon to buy haze off of me. And then little by little, we'd run into each other in different places, and a bond started from there. And Joe's Cuban, so he had some of those Cuban contacts for me for when I was going down to Miami. And then got him into the weed game. And then Nelson is the son of one of our best friends. And then we have Ed Farms and, you know, a few other guys. Some of the guys aren't ready to be out in the open yet. But the whole thing about the Marina Boys is the collection of guys that have been in this for over 20 years, some of us 30 years. And it's just like a group thing.
Awesome. I love it. Well, let people know how they can find out more about you. Follow you on Instagram. Let people know how they can find out more about you.
So on Instagram, it's whiteboykev164. I'm in Empire Stores and Higher Empire and Aster Club. So those are places that you could go and see my flower. And then I do a lot of the pop-up shows, the farmers markets. So I'm always out in the scene, you know, being with the community and, you know, trying to figure out what the next moves. We're working on some possible licenses here in New York. And then a friend of mine, Nick and Dane, they're out in Jersey and North Bergen. Their brand is called Niche. They just won the Aster Club, the Billy Awards. So they have a 60,000 square foot legal grow in North Bergen. So I'm going to go in there with my haze and maybe the sour and help them out and work with them and, you know, slowly start transitioning into the legal market. And then with Nelson and Joe, they they're already in the legal market in Florida. So I'll be getting down there as a licensing brand. And I think a lot of different things are going to be happening soon. It's exciting.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. We had a lot of fun 420 week as well. That was a blast.
Exhausting. Exhausting.
Always, yeah. But, you know, so many people now like yourself who were there, you know, for the rough times can now come out and enjoy more freedom. You know, we've still got a long way to go, of course, but the fact that you can tell your story now and we can hear the real deal is really important, because I do think that you know, the stories we tell now is going to be how all of this is remembered in the future. So it's important people know that people like you are out there hustling and keeping this stuff alive, keeping the strains alive too, that Cuban Black Haze, as you mentioned, and many other amazing haze crosses. So thank you, Kev, for coming on the show. And
thank you, guys. It's an honor to be with you. Every time I see you, you know, I make a direct line for you. You know, I appreciate what you did for the community. And, you know, me as a grower trying to figure things out, because there was no YouTube back in the days. You know, it was High Times Magazine and, you know, word of mouth. That was it.
Yeah, well, thank you. You know, you helped put East Coast and Uptown on the map, and you know, now's the time to you know, enjoy the fruits of a lot of labors, and you know, now we celebrate and keep the fight going. So thank you, Kev.
Thank you, guys.
Right on. Well, we will be back with more Grow Bud Yourself after these messages. Hey, you guys, celebrate May with SeedsHereNow.com. Cherish 20% off cherry strains and Easy Days genetics, and dive into the final harvest sale for up to 45% off selected regular seeds, which also gets you into a raffle with prizes like Unicorn Poop by Thug Pug. Enjoy extra discounts on Cinco de Mayo and Mother's Day too. Visit SeedsHereNow.com for all your cultivation needs. Now's also the time to join the community and elevate your garden to legendary status. Check out SeedsHereNow.com, where excellence in genetics meets the joy of cultivation. And Grow Bud Yourself listeners can use the promo code DANKOSHIP for free shipping on all domestic orders. All right, welcome back, and thank you to White Boy Kev for the amazing interview. Love it, love the haze, and all of the amazing stories. Yeah, so we're in the cultivation section now. We're going to try to keep it tight, but it has been a fortnight.
Ooh.
And yes, this is a fortnight. And yes, this is a fortnight.
Strain of the fortnight.
What do you got for us? What do you got for us this week?
Strain of the fortnight. Strain of the fortnight.
Oh my gosh, if music be the food of love, play on, give me excess of it. That is what I would say to Gunja Gonzalez, who created that theme song. And it also signifies it's Strain of the Fortnight time. So what strain do you have for us this fortnight?
Yes. So because Seeds Here Now is having a special on cherry strains, I wanted to focus and highlight the Cherrylicious strain from Soul Fire Gardens. It's a lemon cherry gelato crossed with their Utter Madness, which is a lot of amazing crosses from Soul Fire. These are feminized seeds available at the 6 seed count from Seeds Here Now. At seedsherenow.com. But the Cherrylicious is amazing. It's got the dominant terpenes are limonene, myrcene, and caryophyllene, all some pretty amazing terps. Smells obviously like cherries, very sweet candy flavor, citrus kind of aroma. Really amazing appearance as well. Definitely lives up to the name Cherrylicious. Vibrant red and green hues. Really just an amazingly beautiful plant, very frosty, very fruity, with that dominant cherry scent, very sweet, very tangy, a combination of basically like candy and citrus. That's just amazing. It's also a testament to Soul Fire Gardens' commitment to producing unique flavor forward strains. And that's a company that I've definitely has been on my radar for a while. Soul Fire is out of the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle area, Washington, and definitely have a long commitment to breeding really amazing strains, including basically just a bunch of amazing strains. Check them out at Soul Fire Genetics, but I'm sorry, Soul Fire Gardens, but basically. Anything out of the Pacific Northwest, I love in a lot of ways, because you know it's going to perform well everywhere else, just because they have pretty rough seasons. And so you take something that survives out there and put it in a more forgiving environment, and you just get amazing, amazing results. Very resistant typically to things like PM and mold and stuff. So definitely highly recommended. Cherrylicious on sale as well all this month of May at seedsherenow.com. So check them out and use our code for free shipping as well. I hope you guys enjoy. That's the strain of the fortnight. And now I'm going to get into the grow tip, which also has a bit to do with strains and seeds and things. It's about choosing and acquiring seeds. And this is a question I get a lot, and it's a tough one to answer. I mean, obviously the number one answer is going to be check out seedsherenow.com. That's our sponsor. They have, you know, close to over 70, close to 80 different breeders under their belt, amazing customer service and all that. But I would say, look, you know, even if you're not going to go with them for whatever reason and you want to branch out and find something, first, ask around for friends who have amazing strains, and they might have seeds of stuff that they're growing if they're breeding, or even just sort of keeping seeds around for future harvests or whatever. Go to meet people in person. You know that nowadays there's so many events where you can pick up seeds in person. It's a much easier way. You can ask a lot of questions from the person that you're purchasing, whether it's at a sesh or a cup or a leaf bowl or wherever you're at, where seeds are being sold. That's usually a decent place because you're face to face, if not with the breeder, with someone who hopefully knows a lot about what they've been doing. Online, you know, of course, is tough. Don't really want to trust a lot of the sites that are out there. I mean, you just have to do your research and make sure they're legit. Even like the seed rating sites are sometimes basically geared towards pointing you in a certain seed bank's direction. A lot of things are mislabeled. A lot of things are just complete scams to begin with. So you want to know that the company's been around. In years past, in high times, I did the Seed Bank Hall of Fame. It might still be up there online, but there's about 50 or so seed banks in that I've put in over the years, 10 at a time, which are very trustworthy, not all of which will ship to the U.S. So that's another thing you're going to want to consider. And, you know, basically just good customer service, good independent reviews, not from like seed bank reviews, but from like, if you just go online to forums and things, you can kind of tell who's real and who isn't when they're posting pics of stuff they've grown and they're talking about the genetics of what they've grown. If you see something that looks amazing and you want to try it, do some research, figure it out. But, you know, you want a company that's going to ship properly, that's going to replace, you know, seeds that don't sprout or show up broken, people who respond quickly, people who ship quickly and safely. And yeah, just, you know, reputation is the most important thing. So find someone who's been around and is well trusted, because that's the key to getting really what it says you're getting. Very important. And it's not a good place to skimp. You know, if you get online and you see something that looks too good to be true, it probably is. So if you're procuring seeds in a place where it's still illegal to grow, I would certainly have them shipped to a different location than the one that you're planning to grow at, just in case, to be safe. So that would be my final thing there. But yeah, good luck, and pop seeds too. Once they pop, you won't stop.
Yes, and one of the great sadnesses in life is often when it looks too good to be true. It is, but one of the great joys in life is the Q&A section of Grow a Bud Yourself, and that's where we are right now. So if you have a question you would like answered on the show, get in touch with us. The email is info@growbudyourself.com, and you can get us on the socials, on Patreon, on YouTube, all that. So let's jump right in. And it's our old friend D-Man. D-Man writes, "Hey dudes, you guys are still shit." Wait, nope, sorry. He wrote, "Hey dudes, you guys are still the shit."
Oh, very different.
That's better.
Yes.
Anyways, I'm always looking forward to the next episode. Like myself, I have a good friend who has been smoking the chronic for over 40 years. Recently, she's being tested for Alzheimer's with brain scans and frontal lobe MRI. She asked the nurse practitioner if THC in cannabis is related to this disease. The nurse said there is research saying that prolonged use of cannabis can cause Alzheimer's. I strongly suggested to have her get you a copy of that research. There is so much BS nowadays with internet research that I find this bizarre. I did investigate this and even found that some doctors actually treat Alzheimer's with cannabis. I'm worried for my friend because she is considering quitting, as she says cannabis helps her with anxiety, blood pressure, and her well-being. Also, there is a history of this disease in her family. My feeling is with millions of pounds of cannabis consumed from the 60s on, plus all the concentrates, we would all have Alzheimer's at this point. I'd love to know what your feeling is on this, but I think I already know what you're going to say. But why don't you say it anyway? What's your response here to D-Man?
Yeah, so I refute any idea that there is research supporting that prolonged use of cannabis causes Alzheimer's. If that was the case, they would be screaming it from the mountaintops, and it would be nonstop in our face information. Whereas, in fact, you are correct. Cannabis can help with Alzheimer's. And as far as, you know, cognitive abilities in older people who use cannabis, I would point you in the direction of a Willie Nelson or a Tommy Chong, who are well in their 80s and 90s after consuming cannabis for decades, many decades, and are among the most astute people out there. And so, yeah, I mean, I think cannabis actually keeps you young. The only thing they have been able to prove about is short-term memory loss from cannabis. And I think that what that really is kind of focusing your attention on something more important rather than short-term memory loss. I know Bill Hicks had a whole thing about this, but and for some people, short-term memory loss is a benefit. People who suffer from post-traumatic stress and are constantly, you know, feeling anxiety about certain thoughts or whatever can be helped by that. So I obviously agree with you and refute that. And I hope your friend will continue using cannabis, maybe not smoking it or vaping it, but maybe consuming it in a different way through tinctures or something with tablets or something of that nature. But yeah. I said what you thought I was going to say, and I still stand behind it wholeheartedly. And I'll be using cannabis until my last day. So that's where I stand on that.
All right. Not a huge surprise there, but we do appreciate hearing from you, D-Man. We hope everything is going well. Let's do one more question. This comes from Steve in Kalamazoo, and he writes, hey, guys, love the show. I have a weird question. I'm not a super experienced grower. I grow inside in pots, but my plants keep outgrowing them. Like the roots get too big or something, and before I know it, the leaves are turning brown and falling off, and the plant is in terrible shape. What am I doing wrong? Is there a way to train your plants to grow in certain sized pots? What would you say here to Steve?
First I would say I hope you're not using clear pots, because when roots reach the outside of any kind of clear containers and they're exposed to light, that can cause roots to brown and plants to die. Now, if they're really small containers, you're not going to get a big yield, and you're going to end up root bound with the situation that you're in. So I always recommend a week for every week of vegetative growth you plan on having with your plants. Have at least a gallon in your container. So 5 week veg, 5 gallon container, 10 week veg, 10 gallon container. So you might just need to transplant into larger containers. There's ways in which transplanting selectively like that can actually boost growth and really help out. I would only really transplant during the vegetative stage, to be honest, because it does, no matter how gentle you are, it does shock the plant and take a few days to recover from any transplantation. So I would say just transplant into larger containers, use a little more soil, more root, more fruit. I always recommend, you know, letting the roots really get out there and expand rather than having plant in a root bound pot. What happens is you need to water more often. The roots are competing with each other for resources and space. And it just really stunts the growth of the plant. And in some cases like yours can even, end up hurting the plant and killing it. So bigger pots.
All right, there you go. Thank you, Steve. Thanks to everybody who wrote in this week. We appreciate it. If you have a question, get in touch with us. The email, as always, is info@growbudyourself.com. Why don't we take a little break, come back, and put a bow on it?
Let's do it.
If you're a grower or you're thinking about starting your first crop, then you need to know about Sweetleaf plant nutrients. Sweetleaf has an incredible line of organic fertilizers and, of course, their legacy line that includes organic and some synthetic fertilizers. So check them out at sweetleaf.com. That's sweetleaf.com. The code DANKO15 gets you 15% off everything at Sweetleaf. That's 15% off the signature line of nutrients, as well as essentials like complete indoor hydroponic grow tent kits, grow lights, plus awesome apparel, backpacks, and much more. If you join our Patreon, you actually get access to additional codes worth 20 and even 25% off. And all paid Patreon supporters receive free Sweetleaf nutrients just for signing up. Sweetleaf provides all the tools necessary for the modern gardener. Check them out at sweetleaf.com and remember the code DANKO15 for 15% off. Hey guys, I want to tell you about one of our favorite sponsors that has been with us since the beginning, Excelsior Extracts, made up of Outcast and TOH from Excelsior. They have been incredible people, incredible growers, and made an incredible product. Unfortunately, a year ago or so, we lost Outcast, our friend Elaine, just a tremendous loss to our community, someone who really helped with a lot, and including the THC-infused pain rub that was made by patients for patients, providing incredibly powerful relief from pain. The product was developed to treat Outcast's chronic pain. So you can trust me that this is a super potent topical, really works. A lot of topicals just don't have that, the amount of THC to provide the relief, or they have a very perfunctory amount of CBD. And this is a salve that works, a real pain rub. You can find out more about Excelsior on Instagram at Excelsior Extracts. You can DM them to learn more about the amazing pain rub. Don't forget to tell TOH that Grow Bud Yourself sent you, and we really appreciate all the support over all the years. All right, welcome back. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Definitely thank you to Terrence White. Thank you to White Boy Kev. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Thanks to you guys, of course, for listening. Thanks to our sponsors, Nature's Heritage, Seeds Here Now, Sweetleaf Nutrients, Excelsior Extracts, and Prime Superior Inoculant. Check out vapor.com for any of your vaporization or combustion needs. The code there is GrowBudYourself20 for 20% off everything, all the vapes, all the everything. So thanks, you guys. Thanks to the Patreon supporters. Thanks to the YouTube subscribers and the people who bought merch. You guys are awesome, and we're gonna keep the merch up there for a little while and hope people continue to buy merch from us and support the show in every way possible, but in the most way, just grow your own and share the love. All right, episode 133, let's put it in the books.